All right. Yep, that's working. So I'm going to be talking now about setting up an apt repository. This is something you'd want to do for a variety of reasons. It's actually quite easy to do, but many people seem confused as to how to do it or why you do it or when you do it. So what I'm going to do is talk a bit about why we'd actually want to do something like that, and then how things work normally. And then I'll finish up with how you actually do it, and then you know, a couple of things you'd want to watch out for. And we'll have a bit of time at the end if people want to ask some questions, or we can talk about what you can do once you've got that set up. So, you know, improvement on things then. So, why would we ever want a new repository? I'm assuming at some point in time, some of you have tried to install software onto your Debian installation that didn't exist for whatever reason. Maybe it's something that was new and hadn't been packaged yet for stable. Maybe it's not in backports.org yet. Maybe you don't want to use backports.org for a variety of reasons. Maybe it wants to drag in too many things that you don't actually want. You just want a small package. Things that aren't in Debian, another classic case. What will often happen is that you know, you'll go, oh, actually, I really want that. And then if you're extra keen, you'll package it, and then it'll get uploaded, and then it'll be in SID. And then a few days later, I can see you. And then a few days later, it'd be in testing, and then you have to wait till end of this year, was it, that Martin was talking about? Which is not, you know, the ideal thing if you want to use it. So setting up your own repository allows you to actually start using those packages straight away. If you have any internal software, you know, if you work anywhere where you use Debian and you have in-house software that needs to be used, usually the reason why you have servers in the first place, then having them in packages that are distributed through a normal system makes your life a lot easier. Different compile options, in case anyone's a refugee from Gen2 and you feel you have to do that. And finally, non-packaged commercial software is that really annoying one that unfortunately sometimes you just have to deal with. So if you can create a package for any of these things, you'll find it's a lot easier to go through the standard system, use dpkg to install it, you know, use apt-get or aptitude, and then have things just work. You don't have to worry about keeping different tarballs in sync and installing on 7 different servers with, you know, compiling everywhere and so on. So as I said, at some point in time, you have enough packages that just using dpkg-i just gets really complicated and not worth your time. So that's when you start doing it. So how does apt-get and aptitude actually know what they want to do? Well, you've got a file, which most of you should have edited, called /etc/apt/sources.list, which has a bunch of lines in it that tells these bits of software what you want to download. So I've got a sample line here as to what it could look like. I know you've all seen these, but what does it actually mean? Well, if we head over to a sample server, and hopefully the internet will work, it does, good. You'll notice there's a bunch of directories in there. The two ones that we really care about are dists and pull. If you look in dists, you'll see there's an entry for every single suite that's installed or that exists for Debian at the moment. So you'll have Etch, Lenny, Sarge, Sid. You can also find your old ones if for some reason you need them at archive.debian.org. Anyway, let's pick Etch. And if you go in there, you'll notice there's a release file which includes some information about what's actually in there and a whole bunch of MD5s. And if you go into one of the actual directories, these contrib, main, and non-free match the last arguments we had in the original deb entry. If we had I had seeds before as well as the suite, that's where it gets selected. Let's pick a sample architecture, i386. If you look there, the packages there is the actual list of files that can be, so the list of packages that can be installed out of main for Etch on an i386. Release contains some more information about what it is. So that's all pretty easy. Now, that describes what packages are available. If you actually want to see what the packages are, you need to keep hitting back and actually have a look at pull. So, actually, I might give you guys a little better example and go into dists, etch. I'm going to pick non-free because they tend to be much smaller files and I don't want to sit there while you watch the download. If you have a look here, this is a sample packages file. You'll notice there's a line that says file name, which actually describes where to find the file. So it's in pool slash non-free slash a slash apps guide and so on, whatever that is. Going back to the original one, pool, non-free, a and apps guides. There it is. That's the file. If any of you have ever built Debian packages, you'll recognize the .dsc file, which describes what's in there, and a bunch more empty files, so you can sort everything out. So as you can see, this is a really simple directory structure. There's nothing really complex. There's nothing scary in there. It's just a bunch of directories with files in them. And the only thing that we need to do to create our own repository is basically recreate that. There's a number of tools you can use to do them, so you don't have to do it by hand. But it's really all there is to it. It's all it does. So that was a poke around. Now, how does Debian actually do it? They have a tool called DAC, which you really do not want to use unless you want to do something like forking Debian. For example, I believe Ubuntu uses it. Debian itself uses it. Some of the other forks will also use it. But it's a lot more work. As they say, if you're going to have less than a few hundred packages, don't bother using this. That's actually a lot of packages to maintain. It's not, you know, quite trivial. Some instructions on there on how to get it if you want to have a poke at it. This is really for, you know, learning how things work rather than actually playing with it, unless you want to be a Debian FTP master, in which case it was nice knowing you. All right. So how do we actually create a repository? Personally, I use a tool called RepRepro, which is really easy to use. There's a few others around. I've named some there, Minidinstall, DebArchiver. There's actually quite a few others. I used RepRepro because when I did some Googles originally looking for it, it just came up first. I looked at the documentation. It all looked really easy, and I just went with that. And now it just works for me. That's a very good reason to use it. It's the newest. It's shiny. Also, as things evolve, some start getting used less and less. I know there's already a couple that have fallen by the wayside, so using one that's well-maintained will probably make your life easier. So how do you actually do it? Well, you make a directory and you create a file in it. Let me give you an example. Okay, I actually typed the file in. That's not helpful. You can't read that, can you? That's better. So, all I did was create the distributions file before I came in, so we didn't have to type it in front of you. This should look pretty familiar to you guys. I showed you a release file before, which had most of these fields in it. That's basically all you need to do to create your repository. It's pretty much done now. There's nothing else to do. Of course, what we'll actually want now is to have some packages in there. So I'm going to use a simple example. Do people here know about MP3 rename? Yeah, it's a simple tool. You use it, it picks up a bunch of MP3s, looks at the ID3 tags, and then renames the files so they all match. So if you have a whole bunch of really messed up MP3s, this program will clean them up for you. So if I just run it, there's some sample output. Let's say that we actually really wanted to say hello LCA people at the bottom of that when you just call the program. So that's going to be our test that we're going to use. Now luckily, I happen to have a copy of the code here. And what we're going to do is go into the code. And we're going to hack it really, really fast. Hello, LCA people. Okay. Next thing we want to do is update the changelog because we have a new version. You always want to update the changelog so that you don't have two different packages with the same version number that will cause you endless amounts of confusion. An easy way to do this is to use dch. And so this is the first tricky bit, the version number. What I personally find the easiest to do is to go back to the old version and add a tag on the end. If you've ever used Ubuntu, you'll notice they do the same thing. They'll go Ubuntu 0, Ubuntu 1, then it gets reimported back into Debian. They'll add Debian 0, Debian 1 on the end of that, and so on. The way that the tools will choose to install a package mean that the version numbers need to be sorted. If we had gone with dash 10, we would have clashed as soon as a new version was uploaded into Debian, which you want to try and avoid. Again, you want to remove the amount of clashes you'll get. So we'll add in a log message so we know what the hell we're doing. Right, we made it nice. It says hello now. And then we're going to recompile it, if I can type. Isn't it? There you go. Now, two quick things. Fakerook isn't needed anymore, but I'm not going to test this now because it's always going to fail if I try for the first time in front of you guys. The dash UC and dash US you use if you don't want it to be signed by default. I'm also going to do that now because I don't want to start putting in GPG passwords while you're watching me. And also, I personally like to compile it, run it a few times, and then once I know it all works and it's all been tested, then I sign it using DebSign. The dash SA is the bit that you may not have used before. It's telling the system that this is the first upload we're going to do for this package. We use this so that if you want to get the source that matches, the system will know that actually this needs to be the first one. Normally, if you package a new version and it's a dash one on the end, the tools will actually know it's the first one. But because this doesn't have a dash one as a version number, it's not sure about it. So I'll compile that. And hopefully it will even compile. It did. That's great. If we have a look, now we've just created a changes file, which describes what we've done. And that's all pretty easy. And a DSC file, I've lost a mouse, there it is, which matched the DSC file that I showed you guys earlier. It's basically the same, except it normally gets signed when you upload it. So that's all pretty easy. Notice the version number in there. It's been carried through. Now, we have a bunch of files in there, and we actually want to import them. So how do we do that? Well, pretty easy. That's basically all you have to do, that command there. Except it's not actually, I mistyped it. So this was a sample repository I had before. If we have a look at the distributions file, there's a code name there, which we want to match when we call repro. So the dash V makes it be verbose. Dot is the directory we want to build a repository in. So we want to build it where we are. And include means actually include a file in. Now I'm going to include into SID. And the file was in there somewhere. Right. We want to include the changes files that includes all the information that we need for that upload. So if I put that in, it may even work. There we go. It's complained that it's not signed. Obviously, you should try and sign your packages, if only to retain your sanity later on when you try and figure out what you've done wrong. You'll have some timestamps, and you've got someone to blame if there's someone else working on the same system that you are. Now, I'm just going to do a find to show you guys what's there. The conf directory stays the same. We've got a dist directory that matches what we had on the mirror before. So, again, this is really easy. It all matches. and a pool directory that has our main MP3 rename files in there, as discussed before. Notice how there's a source that was uploaded in there. That's because we use a dash SA flag when we build the package. Again, really easy. At the end, there's also a DB directory, which is used by RepRepro internally. It's used to know what the hell it's doing. It's just a bunch of Berkeley database files. You shouldn't need to ever touch them. RepRepro just takes care of all of that for you. So what do we do now? Well, I'm actually going to have a quick look at some of the files to show you. This is the release file that matches the one I showed you before from the mirror. And we've also got the packages file, which describes... No? What did I do? Sorry? No, it's not. It's in main. Well spotted. Okay, here's the file I uploaded before with our version number and the path that you can find it in. Again, this is all really easy, right? It just works if you get the right file. So what can we do now? Well, the easiest thing to do now is I'm actually going to copy this to my trusty local web server. Okay, it's all copied in. And I'm going to add it to my source list file. So obviously, normally you can have a bunch of files in there, but I'm just going to use the one we've just created. And if I update now, it's just downloaded it. And I can, for example, do an upgrade. And it will tell me, hey, you've got a new package, which is the one I installed before. Do you want to install it? Yes, I do. Now, at this point, it's complaining that the package isn't signed. This is because, obviously, I didn't sign it before. Normally, what you would have to do is both sign the package in the first place and then teach Aptitude that the key that it's signed with is a key that you trust. So if you're doing your own install, you'd have to tell it, no, really, trust my GPG key, I know what I'm doing. And so I go yes, and there we go. It's installed. That was real easy. If I type MP3 rename now, hello LCA people. So what we've done now is we've created a repository, we've inserted a new package into it that matches the requirements we had originally, and we've installed it. And then as you saw, just a simple apt-get upgrade all made it work. So, what's next? Obviously, because we've done a few changes, there are going to be some things you need to watch out for. The main one that I've mentioned before is the version number. It needs to be greater than the one that's currently installed by default, unless you want to start using PIN. This is where you force apt to pick a group of packages over another one. I'm not going to go into that now, but it does allow you to be a bit more clever with how you do things. You can also use that to stop it from installing a newer package if it comes through Debian, for example, if you want to keep your own. If you do that, however, you have to be careful that you're not ignoring changes that you really need. For example, any security changes, any grave bugs that get found and actually get fixed in a stable version, for example, you would want to keep a track of so that you know that you can find them again. You know you haven't left the system vulnerable to data loss or security and so on. So as I've said before, yeah, you've lost DSA, Debian security advisories on packages you uploaded, and also you don't have a clean system anymore. You've got a package that's not from Debian. Usually it won't matter too much until you start playing games like recompiling libc to match your own thing, and then building packages against that, and then uploading them to Debian, for example. And then you'll get some very upset people when things just start breaking a little bit at a time. So, be a little careful when you're doing that. The laugh you're giving, Martin, makes it look like you've done this before.
No. I was just more laughing about the very angry people, and I know exactly what you
mean. So, yeah, it's bad. So, I've got a couple of other bits. These two links will be quite useful to you if you try and redo the same. If you can't find them or you don't want to write them down now, feel free to send me an email or take a picture with your phone. They both work. First one is from the wiki. It's got all the different bits of software you can actually use to create a repository, as far as I can tell, with pros and cons for every single one of them. You've just seen how easy the repro was, but there are some others that may suit your needs better. There are some that don't even need you to include a package. You just stick the files in there and it sorts it out. And the other link I have for you is debian-administration.org. Do any of you know this site? Yeah? Okay, that's good. This is a site that's been started, I think, by Steve Camp, that has loads and loads of really good advice on there and tutorials and all that sort of stuff, including a tutorial on this stuff. So if you want to read more about it or if you want to find out, it's a really good idea to go and have a look at that site. Okay. Now, what I just gave you guys was actually a quick intro on how to do it, but there is actually a lot more we can do. For example, when you're uploading packages to Debian itself, there's an incoming queue. Now, I thought about showing you guys how to do it as well, but I don't think we'd actually have time to do it. But actually, looking at the time, maybe we would have had time. Sorry. So what does the incoming queue does? It allows you to have, for example, an FTP site that you upload packages to, and if they're signed, you could have a bit of software that actually looks at it and goes, hey, this is a package I want to install, and it puts it through your system. Basically, the way you'd be doing this is, and there are some scripts that do this already out there, so if you want to have a look at them, I think you can find them on the Debian administration side of the wiki, that look at a file, check the GPG signature on the .changes file, and then if it decides it's clean, it will import it in and then just run repro on it. Alternatively, you can just do it if you have a trusted machine by automatically importing anything that hits a directory. So you can do it with a cron job or similar. It's pretty easy. It just means you never even have to type repro to install it in. It just works. Other cool things that Debian does do, build daemons. This allows you to have multiple architectures supported out of your system. Now, when I showed you before the distributions file, this one here, what we can actually do is create a second bit. Actually, no. If you want different architectures, you can just add them in here. So this would allow you to, for example, have i386 and AMD64. What I'm finding more and more is that there's a lot of people who have two sets of architectures now as their new machines get AMD64 slapped on it, and the older machines stick with i386, which is forcing people to deal with lots of issues that they really didn't want to deal with. But soon i386 will join M68K. It'll all be great. Okay, maybe that's wishful thinking. Yes?
Can you do multiple sweeps?
Yes, you can. That's actually what I was going to mention. What you need to do is grab the whole text, paste it down. You can add it in here. If you change the suite and the code name, it will actually be able to deal with two at the same time. You'll need to make the... when you look at the code at your changelog, at the moment, by default, you'll normally be uploading into unstable. You can either put a new tag in there, or you have to tell it that actually, even though I said unstable in a changelog, I want to load it to a different suite. So, pretty easy. Nothing very complicated. O2 builders can be used so that, build daemons can be used so that you can, as soon as you upload a file, it checks whether there's any architectures that are missing and then goes through and builds them. So, for example, you could do an upload from your laptop that may be running AMD64, and then if you have a slightly older server that only does i386, you'd need to actually build packages for that as well. Obviously, you still want to test it to some extent. If you're building it yourself, it probably hasn't gone through the same amount of hopefully checking that real Debian packages would have gone through, but that sometimes is very wishful thinking. So that just makes it, a bit safer for you guys. Okay, that's actually about it from me. Does anyone have any questions? Or, yes?
If you put in model versions of the packet and
see yep.
is there anything in there that will clear up the older versions of the packet?
Yep. Okay, the question was, is there a way to actually clean up packages? From memory, when you install, actually, there is a remove option you can use that removes old packages. Personally, I haven't installed enough packages to actually worry too much about that. I've just left them in. I suspect there's a way to make it forget old packages in there somewhere. But again, not sure. Yeah. Any other questions? Yes?
If you wanted to make a patch like that and you wanted to keep on applying that patch to newer versions because you want security updates and stuff like
yep.
that, what sort of systems would you suggest for making the patches get applied?
I think you actually will want to look at... Sorry, the question was if you want to keep a patch current as you go through, how would you go about doing it? And the best recommendation I think I'll have for you is to watch the next talk from Martin, who's going to talk about revision control in Debian packaging and see what he comes up with. What I personally tend to do is just run a copy of BZR and keep dumping stuff in there and merge, recreate. I suspect you have better tools for it though. So that was about it. No, okay. Well, you don't need to see the next talk after all. Martin, you have a question as well?
I have a little correction and two tips.
Yeah?
Can you go back to the shell that you had open?
Yes.
If you just scroll up to where you said this is untrusted, unsigned.
Yeah.
What you said was this is because the packet wasn't signed.
And the release file.
Right. Because repro, you need to give it a key and then
yep.
it actually signs me. So that was the one thing. And then there are two tips. You mentioned pinning. And you also said that if you have your own package up, then you're basically losing security updates. There is a way to configure the pins such that you can have your own packages, but when there is a security update available, that you even downgrade if you set the pin to higher
yep.
than 1,000. So that's usually what I do in this case. It's like, I'll use my own packages. If there's a security update coming in, it just overrides
yep.
it, and then I'll figure out one at a time that I'm not using my own
yep.
package. With a lot of machines with that, it becomes a little bit of a pain to maintain that sources.list file. Debian Edge has sources.list.d, so you can just drop files in there.
Oh, really?
Lines and they get concatenated.
There you go. I haven't kept up with Debian a huge amount. So the tips that Martin had, in case some of you didn't hear them, the first one is for, I'll do them in reverse order. Instead of using /etc/apt/sources.list, you can actually use sources.d and then just drop files in there as you need. This is useful if you're using a system to, you know, push files out. And also about the unsigned package up here, I also forgot to mention you need to actually sign the release file as well so it knows the MD5 checksums will match. You can do that by giving repro your GPG key ID and signing on the prompt. And I think there was another thing. Martin, what was it?
Pinning,
sorry, yeah. You can actually, using apt pinning, force it to downgrade when a security update comes out. This means that, if an update comes out for your package, it can actually go back to an older version which has the security updates in it, and then when you have time later on, you can figure out how you're going to deal with the patches that you added originally. So... that was it from you. You had a question, yes?
I was just going to say, at one point when I was playing with sources.list.d, I found that the files you dropped in needed to be named for a particular convention in order to use it. I don't know if that's still true. I think you had to end it in .list. So
okay.
Any old file name.
Yep, that was just a comment that apparently, again, I've never used any of these, so I don't know. If you drop the file in /etc/app/sources.d, you would actually need to have the file finished in .list. That could very well be true. I could see that. Is there any other comment from anyone or question?